Hi, welcome back to AR Zone. I'm your host, Carolyn Bale. These continuing interviews on intersectional veganism and related issues are in association with VegFest UK. In today's interview, Roger and I are pleased to welcome our special guest, Jeremy Hess. Jeremy uses his street interviews and free resources to demonstrate how behavioural psychology can help us to communicate effectively with people who aren't yet vegan. He develops content for the Vegan Publishers Facebook page, is a vegan mentor, and runs the Vegan Interactions Facebook group designed to share strategies and provide support. Jeremy will be speaking at VegFest UK London this year and joins us today to give us an insight into those talks and into his work in general. Jeremy, thanks for joining us today and welcome to AR Zone.
Thank you so much for setting this up, Carolyn and Roger. I'm looking forward to it. And I've been listening to your podcast on my way to the sanctuary, and it's really encouraged me to be more thoughtful about my advocacy. So thank you for all the hard work you guys do.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say that. Jeremy, as I mentioned, you'll be speaking at VegFest this year, and you'll be speaking about self-care. This is a really important issue, particularly for vegans. Tom Regan spoke with AR Zone about how as one person joins the movement, another person leaves. Do you think that if we thought more about self-care, that may be less of a problem for the movement?
Absolutely agree with that. I think for myself, I've been involved most of my days focused on animal advocacy for the last 2 years or so, and I've quickly realized how important self-care really is. I've had the fortunate pleasure of working with VegFest this year, and when it came up that I could do talks on other subjects, I just jumped on the opportunity to do more around self-care, because I know for myself, those personal experiences I've had, where I started out just, I think a lot of us, you know, have a lot of passion that we just want to throw into the movement. And it's easy to not look after ourselves. And, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. So absolutely agree that if we don't take care of ourselves, both mentally and physically, that, you know, we're not going to be able to do much, you know, if we don't do that.
Absolutely. Do you have any advice to give, just general advice to vegans in regard to self-care? I know a lot of vegans tend to intentionally not look after themselves as well as they should because they feel guilty sometimes with there being so much trauma happening everywhere else in the world. Is there anything that's sort of just general advice that you could give?
I think that's right. That's a common thing I've heard as well. And I think another thing I've often heard is, you know, what I'm going through is nothing compared to what the animals go through. And exactly. I think it's important to realize that, you know, when we're taking care of ourselves, we're also taking care of the animals. You know, it really is a marathon, not a sprint. We've got to look at the long term here. I mean, I in my talk, I basically structure it that we go through kind of the negative influences and then the positive influences and like how to manage them both. And then also go through some other things around that. And, you know, a few of the key strategies I use in my own personal life is to limit my exposure to graphic footage. You know, simply unfollowing the sources of that footage, and also remembering that we create our own social worlds. So if you're surrounded by negative people, it's possible that that might, you know, influence you as well. So keeping that in mind and really surrounding ourselves with positive and happy people, because if we're able to do that, we're probably more likely to be positive and happy ourselves. And I think just remembering what recharges our vegan batteries. For myself, I get a lot out of going to animal sanctuaries because I'm caring for the animals, and those connections with the animals is really important for me. And along with that is just kind of processing our feelings and remembering to give ourselves empowering self-talk. You know, we say between 48,000 to 60,000, you know, words to ourselves every single day. And if those things are negative, they're going to set us into those negative thought patterns. So that's why, you know, the way we take care of ourselves and the relationship we have with ourselves is so crucial to our sustainability.
I think that's excellent advice. Thank you, Jeremy.
Yeah. So hi, Jeremy. Roger here. And glad to hear that that last answer. I sometimes get the impression that vegans almost like torture themselves, you know, as it were, for the animals, and sometimes they kind of think it's their duty. And I'm forever telling people, you know, you don't have to go watch Dominion, you know, you don't have to do that. It's not for vegans, you know. Obviously, if you can take a non-vegan with you, that's one thing, but the idea that we're duty bound to go and watch this stuff, I mean, I've never seen Earthlings all the way through. You know, so I mean, but there's no mm-hmm. there's no need, you know. Anyway, mm-hmm. So I want to talk to you about your day job and talk to you about communication. It's a bit of a kind of methodology question, really. Are you familiar with the concept of chugging?
That's a new one for me.
Okay. It's when those people, like, say, Amnesty International people, they kind of stop people on the street and try to get them to sign up to, you know, to a, you know, a direct debit, that kind of stuff. The reason that came to mind for me is I kind of wonder whether there's some of that going on at the moment with the street interviews that are going on. I'm not necessarily thinking about yours, but I've seen ones where I get the impression that some of the people are kind of pretty keen to get away from the people in the end, and they're almost like willing to say, you know, anything. And so I think that maybe this idea that you've got to kind of go through a process almost like a script, and then you give them a card or you give them some information at the end, and they've almost like they've got to earn that, or you've got to earn the, you know, the right to give them that, kind of holds them there. And I just wonder whether there's some problem, you know, with this methodology, in the sense that people are going, yeah, okay, I'll go vegan, yeah, I'm interested and stuff, because they're actually wanting to get away. I wonder if there's some kind of, has there been any kind of follow-up research to see whether this kind of seed planting has actually, you know, been any use, you know, after the event, as it were?
I think that's a fantastic question. I think if we take a step back and look at all forms of advocacy, it's really difficult to, you know, when you mention seed planting, it's really difficult to know what happens, you know, after we lose touch with someone. And I think for me, I just try to, you know, have the biggest impact that I can. And one of the big things I think to address what you're talking about as far as people just wanting to get away is I go into every interaction, you know, trying to create an equal exchange of ideas versus just talking at someone. And I found that's a much more engaging chat, and probably one of the most useful strategies is paraphrasing and repeating, you know, what someone said back to them and really making them feel like they're listened to, and then asking those open-ended questions. I found when I do that, the person's actually equally engaged in the conversation, where at least to the extent I can tell, as you say, it's really difficult, you know, that follow-up. I have been fortunate enough to have had some people contact me after our discussions and said, you know, that's really made a big impact to me, and they've gone vegan as a result, and we're still in contact. So that does happen on occasion, but a lot of the times I just kind of have to hope that it's had the impact that I wanted it to. And I think that's one of the reasons I was so passionate about starting Vegan Interactions. I myself wasn't a great communicator when I first went vegan, and a lot of the conversations didn't go that well. And it all changed beginning of last year when I read Motivational Methods for Vegan Advocacy by a vegan psychologist, Dr. Casey Taft, whose perspectives is quite unique because he's the primary developer to both end and prevent domestic violence. You know, we've learned from psychology that the way we frame our points can have a dramatic impact on people's willingness to change. And I think, to your point, Roger, that their willingness to engage in the conversation. So I think by continuing to be thoughtful about our advocacy and looking at what techniques can best engage the other person, we can hopefully address some of the risks that you mentioned.
We do a lot of street work in Dublin, and it's been ongoing since 2013 on a kind of weekly basis. We kind of managed to get anything between kind of 5 up to about 12, 13 hours a week. So we're doing pretty well at that. But we you know, you do get to the stage where when you see people's eyes glazing over, you know it's time to let them go. You know, and you know, the only thing that worried me a little bit is that some people might be doing it, as it were, for the film rather than just for the, you know, personal interaction, which is the important part, I think.
I think that's a great point. I know when I'm recording, I kind of go into things differently as well. And one of the biggest things I learned from Casey's book is to remove ourselves from that single interaction focus and trying to say the exact right thing to, you know, get that person to, you know, choose to be vegan, as it were. And I think when you remove the recording element, I think you're right that could help those conversations flow more naturally. And I think anything we can do that is probably going to lead to a more successful interaction.
Is that what you do? Do you, as it were, do you deliberately kind of don't record sometimes just to kind of give, as it were, the system a break, and you just, you know, kind of interact with them without knowing you're being filmed? Do you do that?
The first 6 months or so, I would ask permission before, or you know, early on in the interaction, if we could record it. Which, to your point, I think I found that especially disrupted the conversation, because I'm thinking to myself, oh, when should I ask them? What if they say yes? What if they say no? Mm. Now I just record in the background, and if the conversation's something I think I might want to share, I ask them after the fact. So I think for me, that's helped me kind of forget it's being recorded in a way, and just kind of it's just happening in the background. So that's personally what I've done.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit of trial and error, though. I think different things work for different people. I've found that works for me. And I think you're right, though. I think really focusing on that interaction is the most important thing. And, you know, if we can take snippets from that and share what we thought works well with other people, you know, that's really what the whole idea behind the group I started Vegan Interactions is all about. Because, you know, I really think if we can empower vegans with strong communication skills, that we can not only feel more comfortable in our own skin, but, you know, we can really affect the most change. So that's where I think sharing chats can be helpful. But I do think it can limit us.
Yeah, yeah.
To your, the points you raise, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Do you have any refusals in the kind of after the fact you ask for permission? Do you ever get a no?
Definitely. Oh, yeah. And sometimes I'm really gutted because it's a really good chat.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think one strategy there is you can blur the person out, and some of those things. I've tended to just stop using that footage. I find oftentimes it's the more kind of back and forth discussions, as it were, the overwhelmingly positive ones are usually quite happy when I explain that I'm not doing this for profit. It's really just to build vegan awareness, and you know, for non-human animals, that they're on board with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had a really good chat not too long ago with a woman who was very passionate about buying locally, and you know, in the end of the conversation, we agreed that, you know, it'd be great to see what you could do as a vegan, you know, within a, you know, shop within 100 miles. And she was one that said no, and I just had to leave it be, even though I thought that chat would, you know, warrant a lot of good.
Interesting. Now, turning to something that is close to my heart, I'm glad to see that you're exploring rights-based animal rights positions. Now, intriguingly on this, you said that you've been aided by interacting with other animals who are residents in various sanctuaries. So tell us more about that, will you?
Definitely. I realized that, you know, I've been vegan for about 4.5 years and, you know, spending a lot of advocacy work, especially the last 2 years. And I realized, you know, I just passionately threw myself into the movement and didn't really look into the history. And I think that's one thing I'm really thankful for AR Zone for getting me more aware of, as well as some other organizations. And a good friend of mine recommended that I read A Case for Animal Rights by Tom Reagan, which I now consider to be quite a compliment, because it is quite in-depth philosophical analysis. And I think you've recommended in one of your YouTubes, Roger, that Defending Animal Rights is perhaps a better introduction to Tom Reagan's work.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of think, I mean, it's ironic, really, but the case is probably one of the things you should tackle last, really, with Reagan, to be honest.
So I might be doing it a bit back to front. Yeah, I just think you know, understanding that, you know, this isn't just a movement that's just started in the last few years, but understanding, you know, what came before. And Tom Reagan's approach is really just suited to my mindset, because I like to look at interactions like a game of chess. And, you know, I've got those opening moves pretty good and the end game pretty good, but anything can happen in the middle. And his book is just really getting me to think about things I didn't before. And the connection to the sanctuary you mentioned is I've really started to try to put the non-human animals at the front of my advocacy work. I think we'll often hear that animals are voiceless. And personally, I don't think there's anything that could be further from the truth. I think they do have a voice, and perhaps we're just not listening. And so I've just started to share my interactions that I have with animals at the sanctuaries, and specifically adding captions with a, you know, rights-based undertones. And I've had a really good response to that. I think it's a very positive way to spread veganism and really get people thinking. And for any of us who have visited a sanctuary, I think it's hard to say that you leave a place like that without a deeper connection with animals and learning to value and respect them. So that's what I'm trying to do by sharing those on social media.
Yeah. In terms of your street things, you know, I mean, if we want to have a crude version of rights-based animal rights, we would say that, you know, a rights-based position would see other animals as rights bearers, and we would see that our use of them are rights violations. Have you been able to kind of incorporate those kind of ideas into your... Yeah, I mean, you know, is it too alien for people to kind of get their head around, as it were, or is it working?
That has been in the depths of my consciousness for the last couple of weeks, just trying to crack that riddle. Because I don't think reciting pages from the Case for Animal Rights is necessarily going to work on the street and just trying to...
Oh, no, that really works. Just read it out to them. They love it.
I remember, I forget the context, but I think Tom was joking that one of his good friends says anytime he needs some help falling asleep, he cracks open the Case for Animal Rights.
Yeah, that's a story you tell, isn't it, Carolyn?
I actually spoke about that just last week in an interview. Yeah, it was his next door neighbour, and they were really good friends. So, you know, they kind of rib each other. And yeah, he'd say he kept a copy of the case by his bedside, and every time he had trouble sleeping, he'd open it and he'd be asleep within minutes.
I can see that. Yeah, I think to your point, Roger, I think just trying to break it down from the in-depth philosophical perspective to just a few short questions on the street can be quite a challenge. Where I'm at the moment right now is I'm a very type A, step-by-step type of person, and there's two questions I've been using at the moment, and it's basically asking someone if they think that non-human animals if they're aware and if they care about their lives. And if they say yes to that, then I ask if, you know, them being needlessly bred and killed is a violation of their rights. Now, if at any point in this they don't say yes to either of those questions, I go into more in-depth questioning. However, I found overwhelmingly when people are open to veganism, they're open to that line of questioning. So I think to someone who's in that pre-contemplation phase, who hasn't really considered veganism, it may be a bit tougher to get there. However, those that are in contemplation or maybe that preparation action stage where they're getting ready to go vegan, I've had a quite a strong response to the rights-based questions.
Yes, that sounds fascinating. I look forward to seeing film of all this at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gathering more as we speak. I mean, I started doing a solo tabling myself, and I found that a really good catalyst to have those conversations.
I just wanted to mention also that when you were talking about Tom Regan's books and about the Case for Animal Rights being quite deep and difficult read, Empty Cages, if anybody's looking for a Tom Regan book to read, I think Empty Cages is the one to read. It explains his position and it explains the rights-based position really well, but it's written for a general audience, so it's not as deep and not as philosophical as the case. So I thought I'd just add that. Jeremy, I wanted to thank you so much for speaking with us today and giving us your time. I wanted to wish you the best of luck at VegFest. I hope you have a wonderful time and have lots and lots of really nice food. And I also wanted to thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Yeah, exactly. So thank you, Jeremy.
Mutually, and thank you for the work both of you are doing. And I think for everyone out there that's, you know, just doing what we can, I think it's just about kind of getting out there and trying different things, because I think when we follow our passion, that's when we're going to have the biggest impact.
Absolutely. No member of the animal kingdom nurses past maturity. No member of the animal kingdom ever did a thing to me. So I don't eat red meat or white meat.